It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings or the midnight munchies. Yeah, you know who you are with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
You guys playing Words with Friends these days?
Yes.
I got Scrabble, but no one seems to have it.
Nope, done.
You know why? It's not free.
Oh, sorry. I like to support my local app store.
your local Scrabble.
Yeah, I swing on down.
Wait, so your local app store is basically your phone, because that's what's in your pocket.
It's wherever I want. I just go down. I modded a little old man to greet me when I opened it up.
They know you.
Yeah, exactly.
Every once in a while, they throw
it free. What's it going to be today? Mega Man 2?
Is that what they sound like? Is that a crotchety old man?
He's an old man. He sits on the porch of my
stopped episode. Selling his snake oil long enough to come and help you.
He runs an old pharmacy in 1930s Chicago.
I get my soda pop from there. It's very delightful.
Yeah, I think it's soda pop, actually. Soda-pop? I do believe.
Mr. Capone was asking about the Mega Man. What? It's just a weird anachronistic. It's the Doctor Who rip in time.
What? And 45 seconds.
I know. I get so much shit about that. I get shit and love about it at the same time.
Where I just finished season 4, finally.
Oh, you finally finished season 4.
Finally finished season 4. I'm ready for the end of time, part 1 and 2.
Okay.
I'm excited.
You watch it?
Never seen it.
Wow. I saw one episode, and it's one of the best things I've ever seen.
You saw Blink.
Yeah, Blink.
The guy who wrote that is now the head writer on the show.
Okay.
Wait, is Blink just an episode? That's
yeah.
an episode
just,
title?
It's just an episode.
And I've never seen any other episodes. I don't know the characters. Like, really, I've never seen much of it. But, like, it's like this episode stands alone. It's just a really cool time travel-y thing. Yeah.
I mean, Doctor Who has a couple of different types of episodes. There's kind of the episode where they'll either go backward in time or forward in time, but then there are episodes that are just like willfully mind-bendy. And yeah. the guy who wrote that tends to write the more mind-bendy ones.
Yeah.
But
it starts to hurt, but it doesn't. Like
Blink
like,
is like those standalone X-Files episodes that were really awesome.
Could have been a movie. That one could have been
yeah,
a movie.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so anyway. now that we've bored the non-Who fans with more Who talk.
Down in Whoville with their Who talk.
No!
Wait, is this the fact we're doing it?
We're in it.
Oh, we did.
We're here with Rich Sommer, who is TV's Harry Crane from the Mad Men Comedy Hour.
The Mad Men Comedy Hour. With all your favorite Mad Men's.
Brought to you by iPana Toothpaste.
What's Mr. Draper up to this week?
So you're the third Mad Men
that's right.
character that we had. We had Alison Brie on, we had John Hamm on. We're just
working our way up.
We're just working
right?
our way.
Yeah.
But we're working our way through the company, and uh-huh. then we'll hopefully we'll end with Sterling or Cooper.
No,
God.
Yeah.
Get Bobby Morse on this show. He's very up to date on the cultural thing. He's ready to go.
What we gotta do is try to mirror the show. So we have to. We'll have each person from actor from Mad Men on, and then we'll end the show with kind of an awkward pause, and then go to some sort of weird, like morose Brenda Lee '60s song.
Nice. Yeah.
Play us out at the end.
I can't wait for our season finale.
Rich, I am so excited because Mad Men is coming back soon.
Really soon.
August?
July.
Yeah. Oh. So this will probably go up in a couple of weeks, so that it'll sort of come
it'll be
around
even sooner.
What's the premiere date?
July 25th.
July 25th.
Chris, we got to use that heat.
We got to
use that heat.
Right?
So that's Comic-Con week. That'll be Comic-Con.
Have you ever done that?
I've never done.
It's a ridiculous.
I hear it's amazing.
Yeah.
I love it. I love Comic-Con. I'll be there.
Seems sweaty.
It is very sweaty. There are a lot of outfits. Like the people who, you know, who do like full body. I think you're much better off if you're some kind of a Xena or just a superhero who happens to be a whore and you're not wearing a lot.
Well, that's like good for heat exhaustion, but not for all the other dudes that are there that ogle and take pictures and grab.
And the problem is that...
Grab?
Yeah, like Blair Butler would get grabbed walking through Comic-Con.
That's not good.
No, nerds in costumes, they take up more oxygen from the air, so
it becomes thicker. It's like that dense sort of what's left over after they've processed it.
They had to bring in effects wizards from Industrial Light and Magic just to modify the air conditioning systems of the convention center.
There was a Batman I saw, and like I was doing a thing with Jordan Morris for Fuel TV, and like there was this guy just in a full like kind of rubber Batman outfit, like just like going like. And like are you okay? He's like, hold on. And then like his voice was like that, not on purpose to sound like Batman, but because he was
because
to
he
die.
Was actually asphyxiating.
Yeah, exactly. And he kind of lifts up like the chest area of the Batman mask, and then just like it looked like someone was pouring like buckets of water at him, with just sweat pouring out of the costume.
Oh god!
And I was like, oh, are you okay? He's like, yeah, water.
We better get some space EMTs in here.
Batman's voice, didn't it bother you in The Dark Knight when? Christian Bale would talk to Morgan Freeman in the Batman voice when he clearly knew that it was Christian Bale. Like, he would still use the voice.
Yeah, but it's sort of like...
stay committed.
Yeah, it's sort of like how some actors are like, listen, when I'm on the film, you gotta refer to me as my character name. And so that's just how... Batman's... Bruce Wayne is method.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
He's in Batman mode...
Christian Bale isn't method, but he's playing Bruce Wayne
Bruce Wayne, method, I have to ask you about Batman right now. Why would you even bother? We've been through this before, Lucius! We have fucking been through this before! And then that's when Christian Bale steps out and screams at the cameraman for hitting his eyeline.
I have not been to Comic-Con, but I have been to some cons. In New Jersey, I've been to UberCon, and these are smaller cons that I go to. They usually have they always have a board game component to them. I'm a bit of a board game
fanatic.
Awesome. And so,
I have Trivia Pursuit in my car if you want to play.
That's not what I'm referring to. But UberCon in New Jersey, and then Strategicon here is a thrice yearly convention that happens near the LAX, either at the Radisson or some other LAX hotel, but it's...
I just want to point out to the listeners that to seem cooler talking about video games, you turned your baseball cap backwards.
I certainly did.
Rich flipped the cap on backwards.
Listen, man.
Hang on a sec, dude.
Sunglasses come out. Start smoking a cigarette.
It's a serious deal.
Rich just licked his two fingers and slicked his eyebrows down.
Let me tell you.
It's because they're bushy and they were hanging in my eyes. I couldn't see you. But yeah, so I play board games, but at these conventions, there's always a... there's a whole bunch of components to it. There's a role-playing area, and then there's a video gaming area and like PC gaming, and then there's a LARPing area. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And the LARP guys will always sort of like sometimes come down and try to recruit people to come and play in the game, and they're in their costumes, and they're like, hear ye, we ought to have a battle upstairs in conference room 3A. And it's like, I kind of love it because I have a very soft spot for those guys, but it's a...
wet bar and tiny fridge.
There's an elixir on the second shelf of two.
Coca-Cola Zero.
I am the mayor of the region 4A Conference B. Are you? What kind of game? What kind of board games do you like?
A designer.
Not Trivial Pursuit.
Not generally. I'm not a trivial...
Sorry?
Aside from what I just said about Words with Friends, we were just saying I do enjoy that game, but usually I'm not a word or trivia guy because it requires a kind of like knowledge that I'm not willing to put the time in to attain. But I like strategy games. There's a website called BoardGameGeek.com, and that's kind of where I got started in the hobby in like 2003 or 2002. And I've quite a little collection.
Can actually now is this like a board game social network? Can people find you on there and play with you?
They can find. I mean, it's you can play on there. Mm-hmm. There's only like one. You can play a Tigris and Euphrates by Reiner Knizia.
Crescent.
You can play that one on Board Game Geek, but usually it's just a place to find like local game groups and. People who are trading games. There's a lot of trading games on there. You say, you know, you mark off all. It's a database that has every board game ever, and so you mark off the games you have you're willing to trade, and then the things you're looking for in exchange. And people make offers, and you just send them through the mail. And
do they have Ed Necrobopoly, or was that just there was that episode in Simpsons where they pull out all the Monopoly games, yeah. And one of them was Ed Necrobopoly.
Actually, just Miriam, AP from WebSoup, gave me Simpsons Monopoly.
Nice.
As a parting gift.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's good. I don't play Monopoly. It just takes too long.
It does take too long. But if you play by the rules, it takes less time than you think. Like, everybody plays with house rules, like money under free parking and all that.
Are some common Monopoly misconceptions?
Well, the house rule of money under free parking or things like that. Paying people, when they're supposed to pay to the bank, they'll put it under free parking so that when someone lands on free parking, all that does is it like you can get someone who's about to be out of the game and then all of a sudden they're flush with cash and that changes the whole dynamic of the game and adds like an hour and a half to the game. So when you're this close to finishing, this guy's now back in. And so we have to do this whole thing again where we, you know, whittle
it. You hear that, motherfuckers? No money under free parking anymore. Money. This is not how I roll the Monopoly die.
I play with people who don't even auction off the properties. Like when you land on them, people are like, oh no, don't want it, and then just go to
the auctioning is the only thing that offers any sort of strategy in the game. Otherwise it's just roll and move. And
now are you a fun guy to play board games with, or do you get super
I don't intense? Get super, I mean rarely, like one out of 50 times that I'm playing a game will I get really pissy about it. And it's usually like after, you know, it's in my witching hour, like at 2 a.m. when there's a guy that I play with in New York. He hosts these like 12-hour game days at his place when I lived in New York. And he would have people over starting at you know, noon or so. And the games would go into the wee hours. And it was about 2 a.m. We started a little game of El Grande. Mm-hmm. And I was in last place in the game, and somebody made a move against me. And I did the trademark, like, why are you fucking with me when I'm in last place? Like, what does that gain you? I'm sorry. I'm really tired. I'm just really fucking tired, and I don't know why you'd go after me. I'm last place.
After that night, you moved to Los Angeles and away from New York gaming forever.
That's right. I had to get out of there. I had sullied my name.
Rich, I've been talking to the other game board geeks, and... attitudes.
Just not John.
You're right. I should go.
Your attitude's not El Grande. If
the mayor of 4A, however, would like to incorporate.
Oh, did someone mention me? But I am but a mere blacksmith.
Girl, take your shirt off, Gary.
This is how they did it back then. No, it's not. They had to build their own huts. They didn't have a hotel conference room. So how was the... I'm actually going to stand up and get some water in a second. Does anybody else want some water?
I'll take some water.
You want some water?
Wow, really needy.
Tell us about the... you moved out here like 3 years ago. Did you move out here for Mad Men?
Yes.
So you auditioned in New York.
We did the pilot in New York. And then there was about... It was about 8 months between the shooting of the pilot and the shooting of episode 2 of the first season.
Oh, wow.
So in that time, we got picked up and then got sort of put together and were moved out here over the course of that time. So I moved out here about 3 weeks before shooting started, and I've been here since then. So 3 years ago, it was just in May that it was 3 years.
You know, it's amazing because... Ham would hang out at like all the comedy death rays, mm-hmm. and so I was familiar with him just from seeing him around comedy. And after the first season of Mad Men, I didn't watch the first season because I just didn't for whatever reason. But I'd heard about it, so then I was doing a show that John was on at the UCB, and I was like, oh, congratulations on your show! I hear it's doing really well. And he was like, oh, thanks. I mean, he's such a sweet guy. Then I started watching it. Like I played catch up, and you know, like iTunes all the episodes. And it's fucking, your show is so amazing. I mean, yeah, like top to bottom, and you're amazing on it, and the cast is incredible, and like everything about it. I know, I mean, I know I'm just kind of regurgitating what everyone says, but fuck, you know, like when you work in this business a long time, it's hard enough just to get on a shitty show, like much less like a show that is a goddamn masterpiece. So how do you, like, every morning are you just like, I can't believe this is my life?
Almost. Yeah. I mean, it's little things like, you know, when we went to the SAG Awards and like Quentin Tarantino says, oh, you're on Mad Men, right? And I'm just like, how the fuck does Quentin Tarantino know that I'm on Mad Men?
That show could use the N-word a little bit more. What? No, I don't think.
I don't know if you've actually seen the show. You just, but yeah, I mean, things like that. There are all the. It's easy to become sort of complacent, and then you're constantly reminded. I just put this on Twitter yesterday, but I have a 2.5-year-old, and she was watching Sesame Street. We were watching it, and I had stepped out of the room, and I heard her start yelling, "That's Daddy! That's Daddy!" And I came in. And, you know, Sesame Street did a Mad Men
bit. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
and awesome. One of the characters, I mean, they don't explicitly say it's Harry Crane, but he's wearing glasses and a bow tie, yeah, which to me seems fairly, I'm the only guy who does both of those things. And so it was like a very, like, and, you know, that my kid can be watching Sesame Street and peg that there's a Muppet that yeah looks like me, that it's, that yeah shit blows my mind over and over and over again.
Are you sure she wasn't pointing at Oscar the Grouch? Because you're not a nice guy, Rich.
That's the one, like, it's like,
she's super passive aggressive.
That's Daddy. I'm living in garbage. No, Daddy's in the bow tie. No, he's that green monster in the trash can. That's amazing. I mean, I remember when The Simpsons did that, yeah, was it like How to Get Ahead in Advertising or whatever, yeah, and yeah they, it was
in the Halloween episode. We've been on like the big three S's of pop culture, which are Simpsons, Sesame Street, and SNL.
Yeah.
And that is, for me, when that stuff starts happening, or like when we would start to see it referenced in pop culture, when the New York Times just sort of says, you know, like on Mad Men with Don Draper, and then they go into the rest of their article, and it's not about Mad Men at all. It's just become a part of this pop culture. That's crazy.
You guys really are a part of the sort of the vernacular and just the tapestry of pop culture right now, and it's really fascinating because, you know, I work on a small cable channel, mm-hmm, and AMC is, I mean, it's not a huge cable channel, but the programming is fucking amazing on AMC.
They've made some good decisions.
And yeah, so it's going to just keep getting better.
Yeah, I know, because you got Walking Dead coming up.
The Walking Dead.
Oh, that's going to be amazing.
It's going to be amazing. I can't wait.
I hadn't read
your
Walking
show
Dead
and Breaking Bad and that. Like, it's insane.
It's becoming like the powerhouse, I think, of this.
And what's amazing, HBO, like, if you ever really look at the sort of antiquated ratings numbers, you know, for like AMC or HBO, right? Like, the numbers aren't stellar, but it doesn't matter because there's such a cultural awareness, mm-hmm, of these shows.
Well, and plus those numbers don't count things like you getting it on iTunes,
or they don't count DVR.
They've started to. They at least AMC looks at those numbers now. Right. They to talk to advertisers about, you know, they say our Nielsen is X, but if you look at the next day viewings and the viewings of our show throughout the week, because they play our show, you know, five or six times in the week following its initial airing, it has an okay number. It just doesn't look like it from, like you said, the antiquated sort of like this Nielsen number.
Well, it's, you know, like, I don't know, how many Nielsen boxes are there in the country? Like, if one person watches your show, like, on a smaller channel, it'll spike the number. And I mean, I would be really fascinated to find out what the actual numbers are. If there was some way they could, you know, that we could relay what people are actually watching versus taking a sampling.
I'm sure there is, but Nielsen doesn't want it to happen.
Well, I don't know if people want it to happen, because I don't know if people are comfortable with the idea of, you know, like sending diagnostic information from their TV watching habits. But it's clear that a lot of people are watching Mad Men, probably, you know, more than whatever the kind of Nielsen sampling is.
Yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, I think so. And it's good. We're
here to make you feel better about it.
Thanks, guys. Well, thank you guys.
About stuff like about AMC, like, really kicking ass with shows. It's like, it kind of like, everyone would always say, like, HBO can do it because they can swear, they can get violent.
Right.
And, like, now it's showing that it's like, you don't need any of that stuff to be able to, like, tell just good stories about, like, awesome characters.
Right.
And that's what, like, there was a big to-do with Walking Dead, because it might have gone to AMC or it was almost going to go to Showtime.
Right.
With Guillermo del Toro instead of Darabont at AMC. And, like, it's like there was like a lot of like big uprising people. It's like, no, because it can't be violent or gory if it's on AMC. and like, because like it's pretty, it's a pretty like
it's intense.
Yeah, it's crazy. And but like, but like you realize it's like it's not so much about that as it is about these characters living in that world of gore.
Yeah,
and like it's like that's just what's so awesome about AMC is that they're just proving that it's not about
it's a
like
good
the
story.
Shock factor that HBO.
By the way, I think we need to point out that after Jonah mentioned The Walking Dead in one of the last podcasts, someone from AMC contacted him and offered to send him a hat.
Yeah, so true. Now, I'll take yeah.
Now, oh, that's
now,
awesome.
Now he's all now we're all. I mean, we're all AMC fans.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel Jonah's pushing a little hard because he's like, well, I got this sweet hat coming in the mail.
It's, no, but like you know, I am a huge fan of it, and I'll do whatever they want. But a hat sounds great.
I've told them a number of times that I will happily just be a Walking Dead or anything.
I said the same
like
I emailed back, yeah.
Just to and that's a thing that I hadn't read a single issue of that. And I was in New York doing an episode of Ugly Betty, and I knew that we had picked it up and that it was going to happen. And so I went to this comic store in Union Square and I bought every available issue from the beginning to now, and read them all in the span of a day.
Yeah,
it's so fucking good. Yeah. It's so good.
You got the big book, right?
The compendium.
The compendium.
I did not get the compendium. I had, this is what happened. Jonah runs a monthly comedy show at Meltdown Comics. Mm-hmm. And so I had set the compendium aside. I was going to buy it, and then I left and I forgot, yeah, like right, after yeah. I did the show. So that I'm sure it's not still on hold anymore at Meltdown, yeah. but I do want to go.
Yeah,
I go get it.
It's great. And because we did a panel there like what was it, a year and a half ago with like Damon Lindelof. Remember
yeah.
that? And like,
yeah, yeah.
It's like, and that was one of the topics was The Walking Dead. And this was when it was still like no one was sure where
right.
it was going to go. And like I remember like, that was the first time I pointed it out to
I've,
you.
I've yeah, seen yeah. some of the cast list, and one of the guys, Jeffrey DeMunn, who works with Frank Darabont on all of his projects, he and I have the same manager, and he's playing the Carl, the older guy who drives the RV.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
Like him alone, the credibility of that show with Darabont especially, I mean, it's going to be awesome. And everything I'm hearing of the amount of money that they're shitting into the pilot, it's going to be amazing.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, again, and by the way, AMC is not a sponsor on this show. Even
yeah,
though we
I'm
have,
sorry.
Well,
they're
even
my
though,
boss.
Even, yeah. even though we have buried our genitals deep inside
sorry,
AMC.
Like,
no, but yeah. I want to say, like, I am fascinated by a network that will make the kind of programming decisions of, you know, period piece show like Mad Men, super stylized, Breaking Bad, which is
just drugs,
fucking
and
incredible,
so good.
And no, again, no swearing on the show,
exactly.
and not really any sex, but they, yeah. it's sort of that sort of. I think it forces the writers to be more creative.
Yeah, yeah.
Much and more shocking than like Hung or you know something like that like needs like sex and like violence.
Right, right, right.
And
so
I also look forward to your summer screenings of Jaws, AMC. Thank you.
And Hellraiser 4, I'm hoping for your annual showing.
That Nerdist episode ended with everyone chanting AMC. It's really ridiculous.
No, and Breaking Bad is like, I mean, if I picked my favorite drama to watch on TV, Breaking Bad is. I mean, it's hard not to be a sycophant. I mean, for AMC, but luckily right now, and I haven't seen Rubicon yet, so I can't comment to that. Maybe that's a piece of shit, and so that makes it easier. they just really have made ballsy choices.
Breaking Bad has ruined From the Earth to the Moon for me because Bryan Cranston plays Buzz Aldrin.
Oh, right.
It's just like really. There's something else going on in Buzz's eyes now.
Anyway. Yeah, right.
What
Malcolm
call
in
Buzz.
Malcolm in the Middle.
They call him Buzz.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't understand like why isn't Turner Classic Movies up in the ante with their programming and going doing some
classic.
People are starting American movie to... classics.
Fuck, you're like, right. You know? I'm not saying we should kiss AMC's ass, but we should change the ABCs to the AMCs. We should change the alphabet to the AMC. Just fucking Barry B. Like, who gives a fuck about B?
I want that hat, Chris. I want that fucking hat.
I think you're getting the hat.
No, thank God.
You might get a jumpsuit.
Here's my address. 95.
You better get a hat, and then Thing from the Addams Family better reach out of it and jerk you off after everything that you have said, that we have said collectively. But I see.
Wow.
So, I'm surprised, like, Doctor Who hasn't come and given you a blowjob.
Yes. Twice.
He did, but then there was a ripple in time and I forgot that it happened. I forgot that it happened.
But actually, that hasn't happened yet in his timeline.
That's something you have something to look forward to in the past.
Yeah, oh. The problem is I stuck my cock in a tear in time and now my balls don't exist anymore.
Whoa.
So sort of a weird thing. Yeah, sort of a weird thing.
Also,
I've got to see that show.
You're watching it like, it's fucking, there's no balls in here anywhere.
Where's the balls? So
someone make that T-shirt.
Where's the ball?
And then just a TARDIS in the background. Yeah. Inexplicably.
We're gonna have five of those on the side.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have them. People make stuff. Like, it's like there's been a couple. Like when we had Alison Brie on, she said, "I want to do comedy, drama, and internet." And then, like we said, we should make the two masks with a computer in the middle.
Yeah, we got some submissions. Nice. For it. Yeah. It was really fun. So, when you first started on Mad Men, how were they in terms of? Did they have an idea of how much all the characters were going to figure into the plot, or was it just mainly going to be Draper? Because now you're a substantial part of the show.
Yeah, went to the next company.
Yeah, I mean, they thought in the beginning, I think they didn't know what they were going to do with us. We were kind of described in the beginning as a Greek chorus. Me and Aaron Staton, who plays Ken, and Michael Gladys, who plays Paul Kinsey, were sort of the Greek chorus of The Office. P. Campbell's yes men, sort of. And I mean, if you look at the pilot, the only one of the three of us that even still remotely looks like what he looked like in the pilot is Aaron Staton, who plays Ken. Michael, instantly got a cardigan and a pipe, and became as pretentious as he actually is in real life. And my guy sprouted a wedding ring and went to bow ties and kept the glasses. And I think it just kind of quickly became necessary to make these individual characters. But I don't think they had any idea. I still don't think they have any idea. You know, I mean, they know what's happening this season, but I don't think they plan very far in advance.
Are we now? I know, if you're not allowed to say this, obviously, it's not going to be a big deal. But is the show jumping forward in time again to like later in the like a couple years later? Or
I mean, I can say the only thing I can say is, and I can say this because our my boss Matt Weiner said it in an interview, which is that we are not starting the next day.
Okay.
We will always move some amount of time, I think.
This is an anticlimactic. I can't say much, but all I can tell you is that Don Draper dies in the first episode. And then after that, it's pandemonium.
Actually, I got to know, there's, your character's development seems to... Have you ever read the Bernie Brillstein book, You're Nobody in Hollywood?
I have not, no.
Is there any... do you know if there's any, relation to your character of Bernie Brillstein? Because some of the things that happens to your character like actually happened to Bernie Brillstein, who was a comedy legend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I know who he was. But did he start in advertising? Is that the? I mean,
it's like he was he started he's the guy that came in a company. It was William Morris, I believe. And he says you need a TV division, and I'll be the one to head it.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and so I was always wondering if that would become your character.
It wouldn't shock me because Matt's pretty open that a lot of the things that have happened to the characters, aside from Don Draper's life story. A lot of our office interactions, conversations, incidents come from true stories that he's either read or anecdotally heard or even from the writers' lives. Like one of our writers, Robin Veith, from the first season. When was that episode? Second season? First season? When Betty Draper comes out with the gun and is shooting the neighbor's birds. Her mom did that. One of our writers' moms did that. So the story's certainly, it's a pretty personal show for Matt and I'm sure every show ends up being that way. Any kind of drama that it pulls from real life, because otherwise it would be dumb. But it's, it makes it somewhat relatable.
Why do they have jetpacks?
Or no, they decided not to pull from real life. I only have one complaint about the show, which is my father was a huge professional bowler in the 60s, and I really want to see some weird bowling subplot.
God, that'd be great.
Because it was weirdly, bowling was the premier sport.
It was the American
sport,
yeah.
Yeah, and my dad has these crazy rock star stories about we were in Los Angeles once, and this local Jaguar dealer gave us a couple of brand new Jags, and we just got drunk and we're just racing down the 405 at 3 in the morning. Jeez. Then we went and I arm wrestled James Caan. All these insane...
Didn't your dad do
stories?
Budweiser commercials?
Yeah, I was going to say.
And my dad did a Miller... an MGD commercial in Miller High Life commercial in 1969.
That's perfect.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I would love to see bowling on the show. Other than that, your show's perfect.
Why don't you write that show?
AMC. Yeah, I'll write a spec. Hello, Matthew Weiner. I'm Chris Hardwick, and... you may recognize me from G4. No, nothing? All right. Well, here's a script. It's about bowling. Yeah.
This is all on post-it notes. I know, it'll take you a while.
Don't pull them apart. They're in a very specific order. It took me forever to put them in there, and I refuse to number them.
If you flip it around and flip the pages, it's a story.
Now, I've animated a little bowler in the bottom corner, so if you flip the script, you can see him bowling a ball.
Flip the script.
I have this theory about the show that... I don't know if this is going to be a Heisenberg thing. If I say it, then maybe if it was on the horizon, now it won't. Maybe I'll fuck it up somehow. But I have always felt that the opening credits of the show, the opening animated credits of the show, are going to be what happens in the very last scene of the show, that Draper is going to leap to his death at the end. I feel like his character has to kill himself.
He is kind of a piece of shit.
Well, he is a piece of shit.
He's a fuckable piece of shit if you're a lady in the 60s.
Dashing.
Dude, you don't have to be a lady.
Dashing.
What?
Jonah.
Jonah, why's your cock in your hand?
What? Hey. I've been there the whole time.
Where are my balls?
Is that an AMC tattoo on your cock? Yeah. That's amazing.
But when Jonah gets hard, it says American movie clap. But yeah. You kind of ran out of space. You got to plan that shit out, Jonah.
There are two kind of weird things about those credits. One is that, first off, I think in defense of our writers, I think it'd be a little bit on the nose for that to happen. And Matt has talked about that a little bit, that metaphorically, this guy is falling. I mean, that's really the whole point of it is the metaphor of him falling past all this shit and trying to land.
Chris only sees the literal.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So why isn't the show animated again? Because the credits suggest that it's an animated show. I don't really understand. Like, no one should have faces in the actual show.
Wait till episode 5 this year.
All right.
It's our cartoon episode.
By the way, not everyone's really that mad. Like, I don't know why Mad Men.
The other thing was that my character was supposed to kill himself in season one. By jumping out of a window. And I think there were a couple reasons they didn't do it, and one being on the nose and the other being that thank Christ they didn't do it, because then I wouldn't be on the show anymore. So they have certainly discussed it, but I don't know that.
You don't think he's going to kill himself at the end?
I guess it wouldn't shock me, but I don't know. I don't think so.
I always feel like, you know, like if you were to flash into the 70s or the 80s, the Don Draper guy would be just like this sad, leathery dude.
I think the show's going to end with the moon landing.
Really?
1969, right in the middle of July.
You think so?
It's good.
Oh, that's kind of good.
Nice future. You'd look out onto what's on the horizon. Little do we know, the 70s are coming.
Wait a second.
I think
we didn't really know that the 70s are coming.
Can I just clear something up? Have you ever watched Mad Men?
No, never seen it. It was a good idea, though.
I watch the show. I think it's going to do with the moon landing.
Why wouldn't it? You had Kennedy's assassination, then you go with the moon
landing.
You're
not wrong.
It's the 60s.
You're not
hit it up.
It's possible.
Do you and the other actors ever get together and just talk about what you think might happen?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. All the time. I mean, we gossip about it as much as anyone. And we have a little bit more information, but not much more. I mean, we still get them script by script. Yeah. We get them the day before the read-through, and we do it. And so some people hear rumors here and there. Like when Peggy was pregnant in the first season, I saw that they were putting her in a fat suit, but I thought it was just like a social thing, some commentary on something. And Aaron Staton, again, who plays Ken, came up to me and he was like, hey, I heard, I was talking to somebody, I think Peggy's pregnant. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And so we talk about it. I mean, we talk about it amongst ourselves, and then people kind of are like, hey, Lizzie, what this fat suit? Like, what's that about? And she's like, I don't know. It's a thing. I don't know. You know, she knew, obviously, but so we don't know anything.
Do you were there any theories that that you were convinced were going to be true that ended up to not be true?
Oh, I feel like yes, but I don't know what. No, I don't know. Yes, I can't think of what they were off the top of my head. There were times that we were like, this is definitely going to happen. And then all of a sudden it's kind of turned on its ear. But that's what Matt wants.
The end of the season last season was that season finale was one of the best episodes of television I've ever seen. And what's amazing about it is that it could have been a series finale. Like I feel like it was so powerful that it could have been a series finale. And yet, you know, I still have all this, you know, like little Betty and that other dude.
Right.
I want Sal. I was like, I was
bummed. I want Sal back.
Yeah, I want Sal back real bad.
Do we know if, like, and you can't answer any of that. It's just kind of watching the company break off.
Yeah.
You know, like now you're this kind of satellite agency.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I don't write for TV, so I don't know how they do it, but it looks to me like that is sometimes the goal. I mean, here we knew we had another season coming.
Writing for TV is very easy, Rich, especially with that show thing here, old lamp in the background.
Light a cigarette.
Vintage television, cigarettes, a couple of broads, you put some booze in your hand, we roll credits.
I'm done. I'm done. But the first season, we didn't know we had a second season coming. So the first season finale, when Don comes home and they're going to go for Thanksgiving after all, I don't know if you remember that, but there was some discontent in the marriage. that continues through the seasons, I'm sure. But he comes home, and there's sort of this almost dream sequence of him coming home, and everybody's still there, and they go to Thanksgiving. Yeah. And then he sort of snaps out of it, and they've all left, and the camera pulls away from him sitting on the steps. And that was written to potentially be a series finale, because we didn't know if it was going to be 13 and done, because we hadn't been picked up yet.
Right.
So we didn't fully know what the world's reaction was to the show, and we didn't know if it was going to happen. And I remember Matt just saying, you know, if this is where it is, it's been kind of an amazing few months. So that's I think the principle under which they try to operate, you know, all the time of, you know, we don't know what the fuck is going to happen anytime.
Yeah.
You know, this season, our boss doesn't have a contract for anything beyond this season. So I never know what's going to happen. You know, I hope that my friends at Lionsgate pick up the phone soon and make a call to him. But I don't know, you know, when that stuff
happens. I'll tell you what I never saw coming. I think one of the most, one of those moments where I was watching the show and then, what the fuck was when that British guy got run over by the lawnmower. That felt like it stepped out of just the kind of normal conflict of the show.
Yeah.
And
the blood spraying on the people watching was just such a
yes.
Of course I found myself cracking up, but at the same time I was utterly horrified.
Yeah.
One of them's going.
Are we getting feedback?
One of them was.
Are we getting feedback on the...
It's okay now.
Yeah?
It's weird. They're all in airplane mode. So
is it the iPad?
Oh, it's the goddamn iPad.
I forgot about that.
Boy. Has that been going the whole time?
No.
Okay, cool. Sorry. You know, I bought you. Because I have the microcell that I put in my house.
Yes.
That I had to pay extra for AT&T just so I could make a call in my house.
Yep. Me too.
That's not working right
Without
now.
Without wires, though. That's the thing you're paying for.
Well, what's crazy is the microcell...
I paid for that, to be fair.
You pay the $150 to buy the microcell so you can get reception in your house. It uses your Wi-Fi... and you still it still comes out of your minutes. Oh, AT&T.
They get you.
They sure get you.
Microcell comes over using all your Wi-Fi, taking
yeah,
up
charging
minutes.
You for it.
Who does it think it is? Never leaves any hot water in the shower.
Rich, if you were to try to save AT&T's image, what do you think Harry Crane would do in the way of a television commercial right now?
I can't do that.
Put a little howdy doody, a little howdy doody guy on there.
Space.
How stuck to the script are you guys? Is there any? I mean, can you improvise at all, or is it just like
not a syllable?
Okay,
it's very very word for word.
You ever use a contraction? They say cut.
Yeah, not, they don't say cut, but the script supervisor does come to you and say, "You said can't. It's cannot."
All right.
Can you say, "I sure hope we get that American Airlines account." 60s.
Everybody wonders why they cut away from me right after I said account. It's because I said 60s.
In the camera after the 60s.
Yeah, not a lot of room for it. It's pretty tight. We had a scene actually the other day where talking about this is hard because obviously I can't say anything. But the other actor...
I was murdering Peggy.
I ask the other actor a question. And instead of answering the question, they are supposed to cut to this other group of people. It's kind of a larger scene. So they're over somewhere else in the office. And... but they were doing our coverage on it. And so I would ask the question and then this other actor would sort of... like try and kind of improvise a response without saying anything, and it just became a clusterfuck because every time they would try and do that, we would start laughing, and the director's like, "What are you guys laughing at?" And I'm like, "I'm asking a question. They can't respond at all, and yet we're supposed to keep going." And so it's like you get into these weird, awkward things because a lot of us are in comedy, and a lot of us have done improv at times, and. It's weird to not be able to break out at all sometimes. But also sometimes it's great because it makes life a lot easier. You know exactly what to say.
And so what is what is your background in comedy? Did you ever do stand-up or were you just sketch?
I didn't. Stand-up terrifies me. But I did improv. I started doing improv with the Comedy Sports High School League when I was in high school in Minneapolis.
Great comedy town, by the way. Minneapolis is a phenomenal comedy town.
It is. There's really, really good stuff happening there.
Man. A lot of people come out of there, too. Nick Swartzen.
Nick Swartzen and Nick and Colton Dunn and I were all in the high school league together.
Oh, nice.
And Charlie Sanders as well, who's
a
professor.
That's fantastic.
Harmar's from Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You know, what's great about cities like Minneapolis and Milwaukee, you know, if you're a coastal dweller and you don't really expect.
Yeah.
I don't know what I thought of that area, like, Laverne and Shirley and bowling, because right. my dad toured right. through there right. a lot because they're big bowling towns. But you go there and what you find is that they're very cultural and mm-hmm. they have these really gorgeous theaters, and it's like a theater culture. And you go there and you're like, why doesn't everyone live here? And then it gets to be like November, December, and your face breaks off.
And if you hadn't lost your balls in that time rift, they would freeze
exactly.
off.
Yeah, exactly. But what's amazing about it is that they're great audiences to perform for, because they go and they listen and they enjoy, and it's, you know, like that is awesome that you're from Minneapolis.
It's good. I mean, there is really good stuff happening there. There's the Comedy Sports Group, and then there's Brave New Workshop. Which has been there since forever, 1958, I think, and mm-hmm. There's a new one, Huge Improv. I mean, those guys, they're all really, like, it's a vibrant comedy community.
And also, the music scene there is pretty good,
and the music scene is good, too. Yeah,
and the art scene there, there's, like, a really cool art scene there as well, and then, like, and the guitar, like, that old guitar shop that I went to in St. Paul.
It's great. Everything, I mean, St. Paul, everything closes at 4 p.m. If you haven't caught the last bus out of St. Paul, you're fucked. But other than that. I did Comedy Sports High School League, and then I did improv in college and spent a little time at the Brave New Workshop. And then when I moved to New York, I started at UCB right away and I took my first classes with Eugene Cordero.
Oh, nice.
We were in class together and kind of came up together. And I spent time there. I was on a Herald team in New York and kind of have stayed with them, in touch with them at least, kind of coming out here. And when I came out here 3 years ago, that was part of, it was at a time that there was kind of this big exodus from New York where the LA UCB sort of beefed up with all the people that I knew from New York. So I had kind of instant community here.
I remember that was a weird time in the UCB in LA too, because before that it wasn't really like a UCB community. It was just all the extertiary, like, comedy people kind of having this
just got absorbed to go. Yeah. You know, to all the I thought the UCB in LA was going to be a tremendous failure, because I didn't have enough faith in Los Angeles as a theater going culture. I'm like, no, you know, because I like the shows that I did, like Comedy Death Ray, and they were at bars,
right?
People could come and go and get food and drinks, and I'm like, no one is going to come and sit in theater seats,
right?
And I was way wrong, because now it has become the epicenter of comedy. Yeah.
And now it's like
it's
a lot like the New York UCB, where it is. Like,
it is.
There's kids that have come up in the scene, and now it's their theater, and like there's just a whole.
They've done it. They've done an amazing job. How do you feel? Does your brain go to different places? I mean, I haven't done a lot of drama stuff, so I don't know. But so when you're acting on Mad Men versus, you know, if you're doing a comedy thing, does it physically come from two different parts of your brain, or do you just feel like you're doing different shades of?
I think just different shades. I mean, it's you're still trying to be, you know, when you're doing comedy or drama, you're still trying to be human.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's even when you're doing something dramatic. I mean, you look at Hamm or you look at Cranston on Breaking Bad. These guys find moments of humor in these dark situations. I think it's all, you're pulling from the same pot. It's just where you take it mm-hmm. from there.
Are you getting calls now, like, to do films, and, you know, like, are you starting?
No, that's not happening.
That's not happening. That should be happening.
What about any more sketches with Paul F. Tompkins?
Because
that zombie one was great.
That was really fun. I've been trying to do kind of like a year and a half ago. I start and stop stories a lot, so I apologize. But when I did Devil Wears Prada, all I could get were comedy scripts at mm-hmm. that point. Just comedy. And I was, you know, I had studied acting, and I have a master's degree, and I wanted to do more stuff. So I started asking to please put me out for more drama as well. And then Mad Men came. And now that I'm doing Mad Men, it's been hard as hell to get back to comedy in any way. So about a year and a half ago, I really kind of made this commitment to myself to start being at UCB more and just getting more into the comedy world again. And that's when the Paul F. thing happened. I started doing more stuff at Funny or Die, because a lot of the guys at Funny or Die are people that I knew from UCB in New York. Allison Brie and I just did a Funny or Die short that came out, I don't know, a week and a half ago. Well, but when this is airing, about a month ago. And, you know, so I'm just trying to kind of be out there a little more. Scripts are certainly not just walking in the door. But like you've said, too, I've heard you say it on this podcast. It's this business. It's not ever, I think, until you are like – Jack Nicholson, it's just not ever going to be easy.
And you know, like, it's almost like you have to fucking grab the business by the scruff.
Yeah.
And be like, no, I do comedy. Like, yeah. you have to... I don't know how actors... first of all, I don't know how people just act. Because if I didn't have stand-up to fall back on, I would fucking slit my throat. I would go crazy. You know, just waiting around and the rejection process.
Sucks.
And, you know, like... The audition skill is a whole separate skill set.
Absolutely.
It's just different. It's a very artificial acting environment.
There are great actors who can't audition for shit, and so they just don't get
And
parts.
If you see people on TV, you're like, that guy sucks. What's he doing on TV? You're like, he's probably a great auditioner.
Right, exactly.
And he's probably also a really nice guy, and people like him. So
that happens,
with him.
He charms the room.
A lot,
yeah, you know? He charms the room, and then there's just kind of a weird disconnect when you put him under the microscope of the camera. But... It's the business will definitely try to. I never go up for film at all. The only reason I've ever done movies is because I've a friend directed it.
Right.
And I want to be in this. I never get sent out for film. So it's, you know, because I work in television. So they're like, oh, well, he's a TV.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is. You talked about this. I know with Alison Brie on the podcast as well. But it there is still a sort of division line of these people do TV and these people do movies. And then they're in the Venn diagram, there's that little crossover of people who do both,
right.
You know? And a lot of that crossover happens, a lot of it happens in comedy. I mean, it seems right now, because comedy movies are happening so much with the Apatow guys and those guys. I mean, that stuff is happening so much. But like I talked to Bryan Cranston a couple of months ago, and he's shooting Larry Crown right now with Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm.
Or they just wrapped. And I asked him, you know, you've been in this business for a billion years. You did Malcolm for, I think he did 7 seasons, something like that.
He did a lot of sitcom pilots before that.
Like, absolutely.
He was one of those utility guys, I think, where they would just, because I remember...
I need a dad.
Yeah, I was dating a girl like 15 years ago, and she did a pilot that Cranston was on, and he was sort of a goofy, bumbly, kind of a guy, but super funny. And fuck, man, that guy is just incredible.
Well, this came out of, he did an episode of X-Files with Vince Gilligan, and Vince liked him and remembered him, and when he wrote this part said, let's see him for this, and it just sort of, you know, was kismet. It just worked out. But I asked Cranston, how has Breaking Bad affected your movie career? Because I knew he was shooting Larry Crown, and I would do the sign, but you can't see it. He made an ascending sign with his hand as though Breaking Bad had really helped. And I said, really, you were on Malcolm for forever? And he said, yeah, but nobody gives a shit till they see you do drama, and then now they want to do it. So it's a weird. I can't figure it out.
What blows me away about that, and certainly when you're talking about the Oscars and the Academy and stuff like that, is that I think comedy is harder than drama.
I do too.
I personally think it's harder because I think it's you know, because in any performance you're trying. I feel like you're sort of inviting the audience to relate to you,
right?
And it's easier to get people to relate to tragic things than to craft an event and try to make them relate and laugh about it.
Right.
I feel like is a lot harder. Like, really great comedies, I think, are a lot harder than dramas. But that's,
I think it takes sometimes a really good dramatic actor to be like a great comedic actor too.
Yeah. Right. Well, and vice versa, I think.
Yeah.
I
mean, it's like, because like Adam Scott, great, like, you know, great dramatic actor, but he kills it every time he does.
Adam Scott's fucking hilarious. We got to get him on. We got to get Cranston on too. AMC. Now that we've licked your taint up and down.
Oh, that's right.
Now that we've licked AMC's asshole, like we're trying to pull the paint off a shed.
Send the Nerdist crew out to be zombies in the
walking. Okay, AMC, here are our demands that are backed up by no repercussions whatsoever.
We're not leaving. We're not letting Rich.
We got normal zombie, tall zombie, fat zombie right here.
Podcasting Zombies is my new show.
Well, it's like in The Land of the Dead, the fourth Romero zombie movie, they had Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright as zombie extras.
Genius.
And like they'd had a little featurette on the DVD of just like them like going and just being so excited and then getting to meet George Romero, and like it was just like it looks so fun except for the, you know, 12-hour makeup process.
Yeah, right.
Of course. Yeah.
So what is your Rich? What's your kind of perfect, you know, when you sort of fantasize about your perfect career? What elements does it have?
It has consistent work.
Uh-huh.
That's real. I mean, I have a kid, and I suppose I can. Here's your scoop. I have one on the way as well.
Hey, congratulations!
Thank you.
So now you can't refer to the one just as the kid.
That's right. That's right. Now I'll have
the other kid, and that's going to make a complex for the second.
Well, that's my goal.
Just call the second one.
I want it to be very complicated.
The other sister,
child.
Julia Lewis. Yes.
It went well for her. But, you know, for me, I mean, right now, it's just knowing that I have this family thing. I mean, I am just very eager to keep work coming. Not that I want to just kind of take everything, but I don't have the luxury of choice quite yet. So I just want to keep working. But if beyond that, I mean, I you know, like everyone else, I want to do it all. I mean, I would love to keep doing TV. Mm-hmm. TV, I think the sort of regularity of it, the feeling of like getting up in the morning and going to work, yeah, and feeling sort of like a normal American dude, great, is nice. But also, you know, who doesn't want to do movies? Why wouldn't you want to do it? I think anyone who says that they don't care about doing movies is maybe had some experience that I don't know about, because my experience has been nothing but delightful.
I mean, truthfully, if someone said, "Hey, you want to be in a movie?" I'd be like, "Yeah, okay, sure." But the film shoot, and well, although on Mad Men, your schedule's probably pretty similar to a film where, yeah, it's like, you know, you could shoot from midnight to 8 in the morning, mm-hmm, or you could shoot, you know, and you might probably spend a lot of time sitting in your trailer, your dressing room, whatever, just kind of waiting around.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. But I don't mind that. I mean, at least on our show, we are all luckily buddies. Yeah. I mean, it makes it really easy that I work with awesome people. And yeah, it's a very social group. They at one point, we had some problems with paparazzi recently, and they moved our base camp somewhere else, and it made it so that we couldn't as easily convene. And immediately, everybody was like, "This won't work." Wow. Almost purely because of the social part of it, that we like that all of our doors basically lead to this one table, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, with a whole bunch of chairs around it, and we just sit at that table and shoot the shit. And to not have that, we were sort of spread out across the studio, or across the entire studio. That it didn't really work for us. So we're a real social group, and that time is easily spent just kind of BSing.
One word, Rich. FaceTime. Yeah. Everyone get your iPhone 4s and
he didn't get one.
What?
Rich, is that what we're?
Rich didn't get an iPhone 4.
I didn't.
That's right. Because let me tell you something about FaceTime on the iPhone 4 is that no angle that you hold the front facing camera at makes you look good or appetizing to a member of the opposite sex.
No.
I need to get an app to make it like slim my face when I have it on my face.
It's almost like a weird fisheye lens. Like if you were trying to do like sexy stuff on the iPhone 4, you're like, you have an enormous clitoris. And every time you pull up the thing, it looks like it's literally going to bop me in the face like a balloon at a fish concert. Really horrifying. Really horrifying. It must have been weird that whole thing that where the paparazzi chased January Jones down the street. I mean, do you get chased?
No.
The paparazzi tend to like the ladies.
They do tend to like the ladies, and they tend to like people who are very popular.
I think Harry Crane's very popular.
He's doing all right. He's got some friends.
Are you giving him a pep talk right now?
He's gonna be fine. Look, he's Harry, gonna be fine. He just needs to keep at it.
You put the outfit on. You look in the mirror. Listen, Harry, you're doing all right.
And you pull the tie off. Yeah, but I'm just not really feeling it.
Quickly bow tie it again.
Yeah.
Oh God, bow ties.
This is why you should want.
It's not a little clippy.
Well, the first two seasons they were real, and then the third season they gave me clip-ons because they were very tired of tying my tie for me.
Every single time.
Is it because you just never learned yourself?
Well, it's funny you mention this. Somebody is writing a Mad Men book right now, and I wrote a little piece in that book about my experience with bow ties, which was that for those first two seasons, I just didn't. I mean, it's really hard to tie to learn how to tie a bow tie sucks.
Yeah,
and everybody has all these tips, like it's just like tying a shoe, which is not at all true.
If tying a shoe really sucked hard.
Yeah. Well, and if you were tying the shoe from the inside of the shoe and like then maybe, but it doesn't, like you're tying the
foam.
Exactly. So I, for those first 2 years, didn't do it. And finally we were going to the Emmys and I was like, I have got to learn to tie my own tie. So I sat down, thank you internet, got a video that I paid like $4 for and just watched this video for 2 hours, just practice and practice. And then I finally got it and I was super stoked. And then I went to my fitting for season 3 and I saw my ties and they were all clip-ons. I said, where are all these clip-ons? And Janie Bryant, our costume designer, said, well, you know, it's 63 styles changed. And I was like, oh, but I learned how to tie a tie. And she was like, great. Well,
it's so 62.
I wrote that I wrote that little piece and I sent it to Janie just to approve my mentioning of her, and she said, "You know that was a lie when I said the style's changed." And I said, "No." She said, "No, we were just sick of tying your tie." And I was like, "God damn it!" So I learned to no avail.
That's great.
So what a waste.
So what's when you guys wrap shooting?
Sometime late August, I believe. Our baby will be born, sometime September-ish, and so I'm hoping we don't push too far, because often we push the season, we end up making mm-hmm. the season go longer, and so I'm hoping we don't push too far, but so I go right basically from Mad Men down to the
That would be a real parallel storyline if you ended up being stuck at work while your wife was having a baby. That's something that would happen on your television program.
That could be a nightmare.
Well, we would love to go to the wrap party. Thank you.
I may have overspoken, realizing I was doing so. I don't think you guys need an invite from me. I think your AMC friends will happily send you guys an invitation.
Well, we did get a hat out of them, so I think wrap party is the next logical step.
Come.
No, it's not gonna get here. A Mad Men hat. Is it like a 60s style hat?
No, it's gonna be a Walking Dead hat.
A Walking Dead hat, yeah.
I'm sure it's just gonna be standard
black hat with the
logo. Yeah.
Man, I would love it if just all of a sudden a show like Mad Men is so perfect for the very last episode, they just reveal that everyone is some kind of supernatural creature. I would love to see like some weird sci-fi what the fuck? Like Don Draper's like, my work here is done. And then he just encloses in a pod and
ascends,
shoots off of Madison Avenue into space. And then they just boom.
I think we just got
boom,
to the
boom.
Root of why he didn't like the Lost finale.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about it anymore, because I talked about the Lost finale on the last episode. Someone's like, I haven't watched it yet, you fucking dick. And I was
you have at most 2 weeks. At most 2 weeks to watch the finale.
Right.
Yeah, we're outside of the sort of point of consideration for spoilers for the Lost finale.
Yeah.
What shows
people
are you
still get pissed about Sixth Sense spoilers? Like,
what?
Yes. He was dead the whole time.
What? No.
Oh, boy.
I said that I want the Last Airbender spoiler to be that M. Night Shyamalan didn't actually direct it.
Why do you think it maybe might have been a technical director with all the effects?
Hopefully.
What shows are there any shows right now that you're watching that you like?
I watch Breaking Bad. Uh-huh. It's on AMC. I don't know if you've seen that channel or not, but it's a really great channel. You should check it out.
Oh, I've been calling it AMP this whole time. I didn't really understand how it worked.
I flit around. I watch a little bit of reality TV. Watch a little Top Chef. I watch Ultimate Fighter. Love Ultimate Fighter.
Wait, you say you watch Little Top Chef? Is there a dwarf version of that?
Oh, it's great.
It's on TLC, right?
That's right.
It's Bottom Chef. I'm tired of making finger sandwiches.
They just give them those tiny little cocktail breads.
A follow-up to Dwarf Shake Redemption.
Dwarf Shake Redemption, yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Anyway.
Is there any show that you're embarrassed that you watch, but you can't help that you watch it anyway?
I have been known to sit with my lovely wife as she enjoys The Hills. That has happened.
I still have not seen.
Yeah, that's yeah. done. That's
still not seen one episode of that show.
I saw the before was The Hills. What was it? Laguna Beach.
Oh, right.
And I remember it hurt my brain because I was like, this is set up and lit and filmed, and they're obviously just kind of going through what they just already talked about.
Oh yeah.
And it hurt my brain because I was like, it's not real, but it is real.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tune in.
It's
like a combination of awful people and bad acting. It's almost in utter defiance of the technology that's used to shoot it.
Yes, I am not claiming it's good. I'm not claiming I even really
please,
enjoy actually, it.
I watched like 3 seasons of Next Top Model, because
I was on for the first. I was on until the season, whatever the season was, when they came out in like space suits at the beginning, and I was like, I'm done.
That's what
when it turned into like theme. Oh Jesus, that show.
Yeah.
Tyra.
Yeah.
I don't really watch any reality shows. I don't think I've ever really gotten into any of them.
I've been into a couple. I really want to watch. I really want to watch Last Comic Standing this season because of Kindler and Natasha and Greg Giraldo.
I'm woefully behind on it, and I know a ton of people on it, and I should be watching it.
Yeah, Craig is hosting it, right?
Craig Robinson.
Yeah. That's right.
You know what? I watch the only reality shows I watch are like house shows, like HGTV shows, and like about like homes and gardens and stuff like that. Like it's like I like that because I'm a house nerd.
And there's no commitment of like. The faux story they try to build in, like you don't if you miss an episode, it's
sometimes I go crazy. Are they gonna sign the Which one are they going to choose?
Previously on House Hunters.
I watched Pawn Stars religiously.
Pawn Stars?
On the History Channel. It's just a pawn shop in Las Vegas. Where, really? Like, there's a gold coin from a 1720 Spanish destroyer, and it's, like, locked into the pawn shop. And they always have experts on call for some reason.
Is it like Antiques Roadshow?
Yeah, I was going
to
say, but
it's similar to Antiques Roadshow.
I like that show.
Except you get the pawn guys that are...
But
like
with
way,
filthy humans.
It's not,
oh, good, good.
No, they seem all right people.
Is it like Dog the Bounty Hunter?
I
has
wish
a pawn
it was. There's no ice.
That show.
I watched a bunch of Dog the Bounty Hunter just because, like, when I get homesick, I watch Dog the Bounty Hunter to remember how much I hated Hawaii growing up. Because I'm like, oh, yeah, those horrible assholes they're arresting are the kind of guys that would fuck with me.
Yeah.
So, I watched that. I'm like, yeah, it is kind of, for the most part,
You could hate a lot of stuff from that show. You could hate, other just people.
People
just
in general, yeah.
Cars that they drive. You could hate everything because that show does not lead you to like anything.
Anything. Not the people in it. Not the people they're arresting.
But that's an interesting trend. I'm sure I've mentioned this in the podcast. We've done so many podcasts now. I'm sure I've tried to make this point before. But what's funny to me is that, you know, you look at any phenomenal show that's on television right now. All of the protagonists are all despicable characters.
Mm-hmm. True, yeah.
Every show, it's just about, you know, Nurse Jackie, your show, yep. Breaking Bad,
Dexter,
yeah. 30 Rock, they're all despicable. You know,
House.
House. He's it's just kind of an interesting trend in, in just the way that we're relating to our protagonists.
That's fine, too, because also, the latest Daniel Klaus comic, Wilson, is just about a guy that's just, an asshole. A total curmudgeon, and it's one of his best-selling books right now.
The first convention of any sort I ever went to, I got good enough grades to convince my dad to take me to the Thunderbird Hotel in Minneapolis to a comic book convention when I was 12, and Daniel Klaus was there. And I followed him around because I read Cracked magazine, and he drew the Ugly Family, the Addams Family ripoff. And I went up and asked him to sign my Cracked magazine. He's like, oh my God, I haven't seen this in I haven't seen this in 5 years. And I was like, well, it's running all the time. He's like, yeah, they don't pay me anything for it. Shit. They haven't paid me in years. I'll sign it. And he wrote Stay Ugly in my 8-ball comic that I bought, but.
Which, of course, is your fault that they weren't paying him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was so angry with me. But he was the first artist that I became sort of enamored of.
Yeah, I actually went to go see him. He went to Skylight Books for a signing and a speaking. And Dana Gould speaking, is that a thing?
Speaking.
A speaking?
He went first to a speaking.
Yeah. Speaking.
Are you an alien?
I'm sorry, I have to go regenerate in the bathroom. Pee in the bathroom.
Pee.
And Dana Gould was the moderator, and I was just seeing him in real life was so awesome.
Yeah, yeah. He's pretty. He's not dumb.
He's just as unenthusiastic as you'd imagine.
As he was when I was 12?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Some 20 years ago.
Because he was even talking about himself. He's like, man, that's when I did Art School Confidential. And people go be like, woo! He's like, not into it. Not into his own career or life.
I hosted a Battle of the Bands when I was in high school as the MC. And this guy came, I don't remember his name, but he played in a band. He was always super angry. I stood next to him in choir and he was always really mad about everything. And then he played in this band, and they applauded his last song, and he said, fucking liars, and walked off the stage. Oh, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen.
Someone just watched The Doors.
Yeah.
Let him in, Jim. Let him in.
Speaking of Battle of Bands and band, there's a Tom Hanks cut of That Thing You Do that I highly recommend.
Really?
Yeah. It's great. It's a lot longer, and it has so many more scenes and build up with Charlize Theron's character. It makes the movies you didn't even know there was plot holes until you see this version where you're just like, oh shit, yes, of course they never.
I like
explained
that movie.
That.
I like that movie.
It's one of my favorite movies. And this is the Tom Hanks edition. They didn't say director's cut. It's the Tom Hanks edition.
Yeah, right.
And it's there's a couple scenes where you're just it really gets you way more into the band. It shows their personalities kind of change as they get bigger and bigger. It takes its time.
Steve Zahn is in that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Steve Zahn's great.
He's Minnesota as well.
I would watch a Tom Hanks edition of anything.
Yeah,
I would too.
I'm a big fan of his twit pics.
I am too.
His twit vids are great too. It's like, oh look, a Woody billboard. Bye, Woody. I fucking love you, Hanks.
Hanx.
Yes, that's just awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, we're at the end of our hour.
Oh, we did it.
Yeah, we did it. Rich Summer, so phenomenal to have you on.
Yeah, thanks
Thank
for
you.
And obviously, new season of Mad Men. People should know that it's coming on. But what's the premiere date?
July 25th.
July 25th. That's
and the
right.
party is...
We're going to be there at the party?
Right before... Yeah, you guys just come and...
Wait, so we're not... So you're saying we're not invited?
I didn't
to
say.
The,
I,
no,
I,
he's
I think
not saying
should.
That. We're not. Chris, he's clearly saying.
So
that,
if we just
we'll
show up.
We'll show
up.
Right, thanks for having me.
Why does the sun go on shining? Why does the sea rush to shore? Don't they know it's the end of the world? 'Cause you don't love me anymore.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.